Go. Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode, here we go, 191. I am very privileged to have, Sandy Rodriguez on. She is a bilingual communications expert, and hey, she has written a book. Choose to Prevail. How are you today, m'lady?
I'm doing very well. I'm very happy to be here with you. And yes, looking forward to starting a nice conversation with you.
I like that. Yes. Now, look, I have to ask, what does a nice Mexican lady like yourself end up in like a rat bag city like Los Angeles?
That's an interesting question. I've actually lived in a number of places. I have lived in Philadelphia. I have lived in Puerto Rico. I've lived in Mexico City. I have lived in Seoul in South Korea as well. And I moved here maybe 6 years ago or so, roughly. At the time, I was doing something very different. At that time, I was living in Mexico City, which is where I lived, I would say, for most of my life. Mm-hmm. I lived there from the time that I was a young teen up until, about 6 years ago. And, I decided to move here from Mexico City because I needed a change of pace in the sense that I wanted something a little bit more laid back, a little bit more relaxed than Mexico City. And Los Angeles was, to me, a very good choice because it's still a city and I'm a city person. I've always lived in cities, mm-hmm. but it's a smaller and slightly more relaxed city than what I'm used to. So it fits both things perfectly.
You know what's trippy? You went, yeah, it's smaller. And because no one actually, it's very hard to comprehend the scale of Mexico City because people are like, I live in London, like eight million people, right? And Los Angeles, about roughly the same. Mexico City, how many people live there?
I can't even begin to say. I mean, if you account for the suburban area or the surrounding area, if I'm not mistaken, I don't want to make a fool of myself, but I think it's around 32 million. So it's a little different.
Well, so yes, you've moved to a quieter city. Oh my God. That's almost half the population of the United Kingdom as a start. Okay. So what gave you this, should I say, the spirit of the nomad, like traveling here, traveling there? What was the thing ignited that within you, or has it always been there?
I think it's interesting. I was actually part of a recent study. Two people were working on a very serious investigation regarding what they called, I believe they call it something like professional middle class migration into the United States or something around those lines. It was a study that would have different implications.
Yeah.
And it was very interesting feeling and getting to know what other people in similar situations as my own might have been motivated by. In my case, I was explaining to the people in charge of that study that when I moved to a different place, I don't feel or I don't think of myself as somebody that's migrating or in any situation becoming an immigrant of sorts. I don't feel that way. To me, it feels more like moving, like it would be for somebody else to move from the northern part of a city to the southern part of a city, or from, I don't know, maybe your house to another house a couple of blocks down the road. To me, it doesn't feel like this dramatic, like big, shocking move. And I feel that the word migration kind of has a very dramatic connotation, like, oh, they're migrating. It sounds like something very massive and very complex with a number of obstacles. And to me, it feels more like deciding to move from one place to another. I think it's the reason I feel that way, firstly, and I think you'll agree with me, is that the world these days really is very, very small. You can visit pretty much anybody you like, if not on a plane, and you could potentially visit people on a relatively short flight, but they're there on Zoom, much like you and I right now. It's really no difficulty. I feel in our conversation right now, you and I could be neighbors. It really doesn't feel like, oh, you're on the opposite side of the world, really. So that's something that I feel is real. And the other thing is that growing up, as I was mentioning, my parents, I suppose, and my more extended family has also always been in, I suppose, have a similar opinion. For example, I was born very randomly in Puerto Rico because my parents were getting their master's degree there. Apparently, mm-hmm. there was a university where they had the specific program that they were interested in pursuing. So I happened to be born there. Then they moved to Philadelphia so that my father could get his PhD at the University of Pennsylvania. So that was a very natural thing. And then we moved to Mexico City because that's where they were going to work. So that's like, to me, it didn't seem like this tremendous, big, big, monumental move of any sort. However, that said, I do think that in practice, in reality, every time you migrate or move to a different place, there are going to be situations in which you will be a fish out of water in many regards. And I think that would apply no matter where you move to. Little things, maybe there are government processes that you're not aware of, or maybe the healthcare system might be very different, or the little things. So I've never felt any difficulty since I moved here in regards to the big things like the culture overall, but I have felt very, very confused about smaller things. For example, one example that I often give people, because I also mention it in the book, I felt very uncomfortable driving down freeways when I first moved here. And in fact, I didn't do so for many years. I only started doing that maybe a couple of years ago.
Okay.
Because I'm used to very heavy traffic. In Mexico City, normally traffic is bumper to bumper. So here, even though my friends or my local acquaintances might say, oh, the traffic is terrible, it's almost like a parking lot, to me, it doesn't feel like that. To me, it feels like we are in a car race or flying planes, or to me, it feels terrifying, you see? So it's that kind of thing that's really, I don't know, I think it's a cultural thing, but it's these little things that really trip me up.
No, the thing was making me laugh. The thing was making me laugh. Look, every time I speak to anyone from Los Angeles, every time you hear about anything from Los Angeles, and like, it's just like, oh God, it's like, oh my God, it takes me this amount of time just to get down the road. It's so like the traffic's hellish. It's all like mad. It's all mental. I can't get things done. It's stressing me out. And you're like, oh my Lord, like from your point of view, like, oh, LA, it's a small city. It's a small town. Yeah. Like going along in traffic, it's like moving so fast, it's so quick. You're like going, I don't know what people are complaining about. It's like, yeah, you get stuff done, yay. But like, one of the things I would simply say, look, with regards to the world being small, I agree with you. The world is a vastly smaller place than, say, 200 years ago. You can get around a lot quicker. You can communicate instantly, like what we're doing right now. But this is where I'm like going, whoa, okay, you must be hyper adaptive to other like places, because look, moving from one side of the country to the other, for I would say the vast majority of people, like, would be like, oh my God, the culture shock. Like, okay, for example, New York City, LA, the culture difference between those two cities, even though like, yes, they're like liberal cities and everything like this, is extreme. And like, yeah, to go, yeah, it's not a problem. There's a, yeah, that is very hyper adaptive, to say the least, because
it's very nice to be described that way. I do think that the situation is that maybe if you always lived in, let's say, cities, it's relatively easy to feel comfortable in another city. For example, you as a London person, I'm sure you would feel relatively at ease when you travel to, say, Tokyo, to New York, to Chicago. You might feel relatively at ease because you'll see people wearing the same type of clothes and enjoying the same type of music and eating the same types of foods. But I think that it would be much more of a shock if you were to go from a big city to a small village or from a small village to a big city. That might be very jarring in many ways. If you go from the smaller place to the larger place, it would feel very overwhelming. But it would, I think it might be even more difficult to go from a larger place to a smaller one, in the sense that you are used to so many options and to so many things that are convenient. And all of a sudden you would be in a situation that would be almost like something in a sitcom or in a movie, like, you know, totally different from what you're used to.
Yeah. So did you find your move from Mexico City to LA jarring? Because it is a vastly smaller city.
Well, it's not that bad small. But you know, it's interesting because I think something that if you've been here, and I believe that you might have been here, you have many, let's say, the county of Los Angeles is made up of many, many, many small cities, and they all have a very distinct flavor and a very distinct style. So some of them might be, like hectic and fast-paced or maybe even dirty or noisy, but some of them are actually very rural or very, like the countryside almost. Yeah. So you have all kinds of things. You have the mountains, but you also have beaches, and you have areas where people might ski or areas where people might go to for shopping or fine dining. So you have like a wide variety of places. So I think that I think all of us might feel more at ease in one of these cities than in other ones. And it's interesting because here I feel that population types or urban tribes are very much concentrated in specific places. So if you go to a specific city, you know, it's all hipsters, or to another city, you know, it's all families, or to another city, you know, like very specific demographics per area, which is interesting. In Mexico, there's more of a mishmash in many regards.
Yeah. So like, this is the thing, is LA like your like permanent base, or are you getting that slight itch to see somewhere else in the world?
Well, I don't foresee moving anytime in the near future, but here's the thing, you never know. It's very surprising. I was discussing this with friends the other day. I work for the county of LA, and the way we decide on vacation days is that you would be approached, for example, today, and you would be asked next year, so 365 days from now, what are your vacation plans? And to me, that sounds a little bit odd because, I mean, I'm not even sure what I'm going to do next week, let alone next year. And it's so hard to predict the future. For example, two years ago when we were asked about our vacation plans for 2020, well, I mean, if anybody had any vacation plans, we certainly all had to cancel them. So the reality is that every year or every time in the future really does bring so many surprises. I remember that I had made up my mind to never move away from Mexico City at one time because it really is a city that I love in many regards. And surprisingly enough, I did move. So it's very hard to, you know, foresee the future. In fact, right now, I love my current career. And a decade ago, it wasn't even on my radar. I didn't know it existed. I mean, it's not even a career path that I could have planned from the start because I didn't even know of its existence. So the reality, I think that for all of us, your audience and in general, everyone, it's very hard to foresee what might happen a year from now, even if you think, well, I mean, I'm very clear on what my plans are. You never know. You might be living elsewhere in a different relationship. Maybe you might have a child. Maybe you might have new friends, or maybe you will lose touch with other friends. Just things are so, so surprising, I suppose.
Yeah, no, like, I get that. I get that. It's like, I don't know if they did this game, like, when you're in school. Like, okay, you, like, you stand at one corner of a room, and then basically you like put a chair at the other side of the room. And like, basically the teacher were like, okay, in a straight line, get to that chair. And like, basically, yeah, he'll put something in front of you. And then it would like people, quite a lot of people would stop. Other days, he'll just like, okay, get to that chair. So if you threw something in front of you or put a barrier in front of you, like people would naturally move around that barrier, go over that barrier, go under that barrier, do everything. And they'll make their way to that chair. But like, because like when you go, oh, you must do it in a straight line, people forget you can go around these things. You don't have to do it in a straight, perfect line. It doesn't have to be linear. You just got to know, okay, the destination's over there. That's where I'd like to be, but how I get to that destination can like be done in many different ways. And it doesn't necessarily go in a straight line.
I absolutely love that. And you know, it reminds me of something that I mentioned in the book and that I've seen happen often in my life. And I'm sure everybody can think of examples. There's this author that was from Barbados. This author was called Neville Goddard, and he had this theory. He was kind of a mystical man. But the interesting thing is that he had a theory that there's something called the bridge of incidents. Sometimes things happen that seem unfavorable or unpleasant. Mm. And surprisingly enough, when we look back on those incidents, we see that they were actually stepping stones guiding us toward an outcome that was more desirable. And sometimes it might be something minor. For example, you might be rejected from while doing a job interview, but then you will find a better job, better suited for your skill set, for example. But even in very dramatic situations, it can sometimes tend to happen. I included a story in the book, not to shock the reader, but just because I thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
There was this time near my neighborhood that this man was arrested after being found in front of an elementary school with a truck full of weapons and all kinds of terrible things. Now, certainly, I mean, well, I'm glad that they caught this man. But here's the thing. The police were already on the lookout for this individual because a week before, he had gone by that school and had tried to abduct a couple of little girls. Luckily, those little girls told their teachers, told the parents, who in turn told the authorities, who were on the lookout for this man, and they caught this man the following week before he did anything terrible. Now, this, of course, is a horrible story. There's nothing good about the story. It's very sad. It's very dramatic. But the thing is, if the man had not gone around trying to abduct the children, the police would not have been looking for him. Mm-hmm. And maybe a larger tragedy would have come into play because nobody would be looking for this man. So, of course, it's very unfortunate that the man was harassing the little girls. That's a terrible thing. Mm. But if it hadn't been for that incident, maybe something way worse would have happened. So danger was averted thanks to something that was certainly not wonderful. Now, that, of course, is a very, very dramatic and very horrifying story overall. But even in general, it often happens that sometimes, for example, let's say that you miss your bus or a train or something, and it ends up happening that you take a different one and you run into a long-lost friend or something like that. So in theory, even the bad can have something good come out of it.
Mm. Yeah, no, because like this is the thing. Do you remember a film called Sliding Doors?
Yes, exactly. The one with Gwyneth Paltrow. Yes.
Indeed. Like it's like sliding door moments. Like if you think about like the number of things which like thankfully you can't play out both scenarios or it'll start to drive you bonkers. But like, yeah, if you went left instead of right, up instead of down, yeah, a number of things would happen in a different way. I remember, many moons ago, like I can't even remember this guy's name. I think it may have been Jack. Like my friend worked at a summer camp up in Maine called Meadowlark. And like a bunch of like people came over to the UK from his summer camp to visit. The reason why this guy stuck in my head is we're in a nightclub. Now, we're all dancing around, and like for whatever reason, he decided to jump onto this wall which had some grating on it. The grating came off of the wall, and he like landed on his back, staring up at the ceiling.
Oh my goodness!
like at this point in time, like yes, we did the only thing we could do at that present time, that was to laugh at him, and like while he got up and dusted himself down. 4 months later, I was in New York, Grand Central Station. I needed to call my brother from another mother at the station because I was gonna get on the train, go up to Poughkeepsie to meet him so we can go back to his. On the phone, I put it down, I turned around, and he was right there, like randomly, like from 3,500 miles away, randomly bumping into him. And the other thing, what was even more random, we were catching the same train at the same time.
Yeah. So, oh my goodness.
Yeah, all it would have taken would me be on the phone for 2 seconds longer. Like not to make a phone call there, call earlier, and like, yeah, would not have like seen him there again. But it's like, yeah, quite crazy.
Amazing.
Yeah. So like, this is the thing, like coming to LA, right? What was your sort of sliding doors moment? Because Mexico City was the city you loved. It was not going to be the place you were going to leave, you know? What was that?
Exactly. Well, let me tell you, one of the main reasons that made me decide to move was that I was too much in love with my career at the time. Now, that sounds like a good problem to have, right? But it kind of was not. I at the time, during my time in Mexico City, I was a newspaper editor. I was an editorial coordinator for one of the foremost newspapers in Latin America. And I was very, very, very passionate about that. But I was so passionate about that I really did that to the exclusion of everything else. Absolutely everything else. It is something that was all consuming. It was literally the only thing that I was doing. I really was not doing anything else in any regard. So I didn't mind. I certainly didn't mind because I loved that career path so much. But after doing that for over a decade and a half, I realized that I had been living in a form of suspended animation, in a sense, because I didn't do anything beyond that. In other words, I had no life beyond that. So it was something that I really had to take a long, hard look at. And that was my reason for wishing to move to some place where first work days are more contained. Because, well, certainly here in the U.S. and in many other countries, they are. I mean, even if you're working very hard, even if your job might be grueling or complex or high responsibility, normally it is more contained within a specific group of hours. Yeah. In my case specifically, right? Even, for example, in my case, being a government job, a job currently with the county, it starts at 8, it finishes at 5, and it's done. I mean, nobody's expecting you to be there beyond that time. Whereas in many other countries, again, it does vary from country to country and city to city, but in many other countries, that's simply not something you would do. You wouldn't just saunter out the door at 5 because people would think, oh, you're a slacker, or how come you're leaving? What is your problem? So it's a different situation. And, you know, here's the interesting thing. Like I was telling you, I found a career path that was perfectly in line with everything I could have hoped for, but I couldn't have predicted this because I didn't even know it existed. So when I moved here initially, I was looking for careers in media, and people in media were indeed reaching out to me because that's what I knew or where my experience lay. Mm-hmm. However, what ended up happening is that I discovered and fell into a career in something called court interpreting, which is basically interpreting for within the legal system.
Yeah.
So it's very fascinating. I'm in-house interpreter for one of the two largest courthouses in the world right now. So we're very busy, and it's very fascinating. It has everything I like because it's fast paced. I like that.
Yeah.
It's high responsibility, which is also something that I personally like, but it's within a more contained environment. It's the type of activity that you do in the moment. And when you're done, you're done. You're not taking work home. You're not, coming back the next day and starting again on the same project. It's something that you do then and there, and it's gone. It's done.
I would imagine translating for the courts, you must like get some really sort of juicy cases. So it's must really like I'm not saying you're a gossip or anything, but they're like if you're working in media, there's a slight need for that sort of like, oh, really?
Yes, and it really is. You're not wrong at all. You're absolutely correct. For example, in my courthouse, one of the high profile cases that is going on right now in my courthouse is the Britney Spears case, for example, which is very fascinating, of course. And to me, it's more fascinating from a legal perspective than from the celebrity perspective, because I mean, certainly the fact that this is happening to a celebrity, it shines a light on a situation that is probably more overarching. So it's really quite interesting. And so normally we do have a lot of very interesting cases. Certainly not all are high profile like this one, but they're all very important to the people involved. And consequently, everybody that's there, be they a celebrity or just your neighbor, they're all very, very passionate about what's going on, and human emotions are at their peak. So it's just very interesting, I think.
Yeah, I think with regards to the sort of Britney Spears case and the whole realm of conservatorship, it's like, look, I would say to anyone, like, okay, pay attention. Like, I'm not familiar with the UK if they do the same thing over here, but it is a very predatory industry. And like, yeah, like people like, oh, free Britney from Britney's dad. It's like, okay, yeah, that's one thing. But you could be randomly in the hospital at a certain age and there, yeah, this person will rock up and like go, hey, I'm now your legal guardian. I now control everything about your life. And yeah, you need money. I control that. You want to sell your house? I control that. Yeah, you have no control. And I think people need to realize that because it might not be important now, but down the line, protect yourself from that because hey, if Britney Spears, like all the money you can imagine and all the celebrity, all the fame can fall into this, anyone can, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I would recommend that people watch a movie on Netflix called I Care a Lot. I don't know if you've already seen that one, but I think that anybody that watches will say, I really need to take action to prevent strange things from happening in the future.
Oh yeah, indeed, indeed. Yeah, no, like you know what? That is very like it's interesting how your path took you because look, you had the self-awareness to like go, hey, I'm working in Mexico, I'm like doing this media job, and everything else in my life, and when you said suspended animation, I think that's like yeah, very true for a lot of people. Everything in my life is on hold, stopped, or like basically avenues and things which could have been there have now disappeared and gone. Like to like go, okay, you know what? I need to change and do something different. And you almost fell back into it when you came into LA, when you like reached out to media people and went, wait a second, this is my one chance to do that leap. I think not many people would actually do that. They'll like go, okay, yeah, I'm doing this. And you know what? I don't know if you would equate it. They'll go through that hardship for a long time before they like go, okay, yeah. And but how many years would have gone by? But you had the like insight to go, wait, no, let me do something completely different. Was that
Let
easy?
me No, that's why it took me that long. Now, let me tell you that I think the reason that it took me so long is that I really liked it. You know, if you're in a very unhappy situation, bad job, bad marriage, bad roommate situation, whatever the case may be, sometimes even if it's a terrible situation, people will not take action, even if it's a terrible situation. Often, even in let's say, like a let's say, dead end job that you're not pleased with or something like that, even if you can tell and you can see, it happens that people might not do anything about it for years and years and years until it's definitely too late. But in my case, it was even worse because I was happy. So I really had no motivation to even consider this. So it was twice as difficult. Not only was it something that that was really eating up every single moment, so I didn't have time to make any kind of plan, but I also really enjoyed it. So it was very difficult. The thing is that sometimes just life becomes very, very fast paced. I remember during one of my final semesters in college, in Mexico, they ask you to do something called prácticas profesionales or professional practice, which is similar to an internship.
Right.
But it's a requirement. It's a requirement prior to completing your studies. So in any case, I was in a situation in my early 20s where, okay, I had to get up early in the morning because I had to be at my internship at 7. Then I was there until noon. And then I had to rush out because my classes started at 1. And then I was at the university on campus between 1 p.m. and 10 p.m. So then at night, I would have to head home. So I would be there maybe at 11 and I would have to start doing my homework because, well, that's the time I got home. So really, I felt like crying, but I had no time to cry. So for efficiency's sake, I decided to just cry while in the shower and just get it over with and then just, you know, head on home. You know, it's crazy. It's crazy. So yeah, so the reality is that sometimes you're just so overwhelmed by, you know, the things that you have to do that you really don't have space or the time to think about what will my next move be or what can I do? I mean, obviously in that situation, I had no choice because it was part of completing my studies, but often we find ourselves super busy, so busy that we can't even make any plans for the future. And, you know, so it was very surprising because if back then I had been told, okay, so you don't want to do this anymore because it's eating too much into your life, what would you like to do? I really would not have said court interpreting because I didn't even know that that existed. So that's the kind of thing that I was mentioning, that you might be surprised at things that come into your view or your radar in the future. Very interesting.
Yeah, like this is the thing. Yeah, there are, like, how can I put it? With, like, when you don't have time to sort of self-reflect, like, okay, there's opportunities all around us all of the times. And like the whole thing is when we don't self-reflect or look at ourselves and get a real value of who we are, we don't see those options. We see the either the situations or scenarios we're currently in, because that's, we like when you say, okay, if I said, yeah, look for a yellow car, all of a sudden you won't see yellow cars for ages and yellow cars will appear. Like, and you're like, oh, I'm doing a media job. You look out there, all you see is media jobs. So like when you like go, okay, I need to find something different. And look, that court job for yourself could have been right in front of your face, going, look at me, look at me, look at me. But you wouldn't have seen it because you're just there. Other people who are stuck in dead end jobs, who are sort of like going through that period, no, they can't, like, they don't take that, they can't sometimes take that time to evaluate themselves, or they don't evaluate themselves, even if they do have the time. And so they find themselves stuck, even if it's a case of, yeah, they're unemployed and like they're like going, okay, I want this type of job. But if they're in that sort of like, they haven't done the like self-assessment, like looking into themselves properly, they will never sort of get past that sort of, yeah, I'm still unemployed type situation, that scenario.
Absolutely. I've also noticed that a lot of people, when looking for jobs, and I'm familiar with this because when I moved here, I was searching for a job. I did not move here with something already in hand. I feel that when you're looking for a job, firstly, you do need to be, let's say, open to be surprised, but you also need to be very methodical in the sense that looking for a job is a job. You need to actually get up early, get dressed, make calls, go online, you know, do it in a very rigorous way. Because if you're not really looking, I can certainly see how it could become very depressing and you would feel very unproductive. And fortunately, I do think that life does have a way of surprising people. I remember when I was living in Mexico that this guy from Texas moved there. He was very interested in finding employment either in graphic design or as a football coach. So he asked me if I knew any possible options. And I said, well, maybe not as a football coach. I'm really not super familiar with that industry. So no, but I'll ask friends about maybe openings as to graphic design. Sadly, that was during the time that media outlets worldwide were actually cutting down on staff and actually getting rid of people rather than bringing new staff members on. So even though I asked on his behalf, I really couldn't find anything for him. And then he called me and said, oh, by the way, I forgot to mention, I don't know Spanish. And I thought, well, that's going to be an additional layer of difficulty. I mean, not only does the man not speak the language of his new country, but it's also like an industry that is contracting. Well, wouldn't you know it, that about 2 days after he mentioned that he didn't speak Spanish, I got an email from a former coworker saying, hey, I'm starting my own English language newspaper here in Mexico. It's going to be a sports heavy newspaper. It's a sports newspaper. And I need someone that speaks only or mostly English because he's going to need to be communicating with the reporters that are English only. So I thought, it couldn't be more ideal. So I put them in touch and they ended up working together for several years. They won design awards and it was just a perfect match. So, I mean, really, you do need to let people know what you're looking for. You never know.
Like, this is the thing, as you say, finding the job is a job itself. Now, I would say, like, finding the job is a contact sport. It is one of those things where, okay, you need to be out there day in, day out, making sure you, like, connecting with people left, right, and center. Because, look, for that job to come up and your friend like, oh yeah, I'm looking for X, Y, and Z. And this other guy who's come over from Texas into Mexico, not knowing a word of Spanish. Oh God, I've got to say, that is, I'm going to have to say it like this. He's the luckiest son of a bitch alive, to say the least, because look, that is serendipity on steroids, because But if he didn't contact you, as you said, that would have passed him by. In a city of like 32 million people, that job had to be tailor-made for him.
And you know, the crazy thing is that it was also like finding a needle in a haystack for the person wanting to fill the position. The lady that was creating the newspaper, she also needed this designer soon, and it had to be a sports expert, and it had to be someone that spoke English, and they had to be available then and there. So it was just a wonderful match for both of them, I think.
Yeah, it's more than finding a needle in a haystack. It's finding the right needle in a pile of needles. It's like, look, you're not going right. Is that mad?
Yes.
Oh my God. Sorry, please.
I was reading the other day about something extremely interesting. At least I thought it was very interesting. It's something called the strength of weak ties. And what that means is that sometimes we don't see the tremendous value that our acquaintances bring to the table. We can certainly appreciate our good friends or close circle, but we don't really realize how important casual acquaintances can be. Now, here's the thing. In theory, if you ask people, so how did you find your job? Or where did you meet your spouse? Or where did you find your house? Who sold it to you? Or just things like that. Normally people will say, well, it was through an acquaintance. And if you ask, oh, you mean a friend? People would say, no, actually it was an acquaintance. And here's the thing, that apparently our close friends, even though they have our best interest at heart, they have the exact same information that we do. So normally they can't really provide anything beyond what we already know in that regard. Whereas a casual acquaintance, well, I mean, they move in different circles. They might be in another part of town. They do other kinds of things. They might be a different age, different gender, different profession. Mm. So they know things that we don't know. So for example, let's say if somebody is saying, oh, I would love to get married, I'd love to meet somebody to date and begin a relationship with, maybe I might know somebody for them, even if that person and I are not very close, because I might have a group of other friends that have never met this person, and they might get along very well. And normally when you ask your very close friends, hey, can you set me up with someone because I'm looking to date someone, they might say, well, I have no one in mind that you don't already know, because we move in the same circle. So it's interesting stepping outside of your normal circle of friends.
Like, this is the thing. I would say utilizing your network is always, I think, an underdeveloped thing, be it for jobs, be it for, like, love interests, be it for a myriad of things. I think it's one of those things where... because people get comfortable with the people around them, they don't actually push themselves to get out of their sort of current realm of discomfort. So it's like, okay, yeah, let's see what's just beyond the horizon, if you get what I mean.
Exactly. And also the thing is that it's interesting, I think it's useful to develop a group of friends or to develop friendships with people that are different from yourself, even if they have very different opinions, especially these days where many things are very polarized. Mm. I think it's even more important to make friends outside of what you would normally do, because it enriches your life greatly. Sometimes I remember that old TV show, I don't know if it's still going on, Big Brother.
Oh yeah.
Normally I would find that conversations were the most interesting when you had a mix of men speaking with women, or one type of person speaking with another type of person. Whereas when you saw something that included no conflict at all, it was extremely boring to watch. And even in practice, I'm sure that, for example, if you have a conversation with somebody that shares every last one of your opinions, it can't really be much fun, because you would say, how do you feel about that? And they would say, I think this. And you would say, oh, I agree. And what about this other thing? Oh, I also agree. And it would be a very flat conversation. And even occasionally, it's good to spend time apart from your regular friends so that you have more topics to discuss and more newness to bring to the interaction. For example, if you have a best friend, for example, or some people that are in dating relationships with people that they see 24 hours a day because they vacation together, they live together, they work together. I really cannot imagine how that would go if you would ask a person in that situation, so how was your morning? They would say, well, you were there, you saw my morning. Okay, so what did you do last night? Well, you were also there. Remember that we saw this movie. And what did you eat for lunch? Well, what we both ate. Remember, we ate together. So it becomes very dull. I think you need a little spark, and the way to bring it into any interaction is, you know, doing things on your own.
Yeah, no, like, I agree. Like, just like, you were there. You were always there. Please go away. I go far, far away. Come back in the month. It's like, just like, yeah. But yeah, like, what I would simply say with regards to the, I don't know what the situation was like in Mexico City, if it was sort of like so polarizing as it is currently in the United States, like people so sort of diametrically opposed, or you've got to be on my team or we can't talk at all. What the power of conversation, this is like one of the few reasons why I started this podcast, the power of conversations with different people is one of the best and most powerful things you can actually do. Because like when you've got two different camps and you come together, you have that discussion, like you might not go part the best way, but you might actually throw out a good idea, throw out a bad idea, or throw out something which is so splendid, it goes on, bad idea goes off and dies, but it has that chance to grow, evolve, become something new and different. But if you're talking in your groups, you're not growing. You're not putting yourself in a place of discomfort. And where people grow, where things come out of adversity, that's not happening when you're just talking amongst like-minded people, you know?
Absolutely. And you get a very, well, I don't know if biased is the proper word, but you do get a very limited sense of what the world is like. If you're only hanging out with people that share every last one of your opinions, you really don't have much room to grow, as you were saying. And it becomes something similar to what happens online. Normally, algorithms, and not only on social media, but in general, they show you what you already agree with, what you already like, what you already know, which is fine. I mean, of course, we want to be presented with things that we like, of course, but it does give us a very limited view of the world. We might assume that everybody shares our points of view, and it's quite surprising when you go out into the world and you find that, no, that's not the case. So it's really better to just understand that and start, you know, expanding your circle.
Yeah, a planet of almost 8 billion people. Yeah, we don't all think alike. We don't even speak, like, we don't all speak the same language. So yeah, how do you expect everyone to be like on the same page at the same time, all the time? it's crazy. But like, yeah, with this, look, what made you say, okay, you know what? I've come to LA, now I'm like doing the court thing. What made you like go, hey, you know what? I need to write a book. What brought that on?
Well, let me tell you, I had had this idea for a couple of years, and I had kind of started writing it. But you know, as we were saying, sometimes life gets in the way and different things happen, right? But the book was, let's say, it was started, although it was by no means finished. I had a very rough draft. Ready when COVID inspired lockdowns took place. So I thought, it's now or never. I need to complete this now, because this is the one time in my lifetime that I might be, you know, home long enough to complete the project. And actually, I really set my mind to completing the project. I set deadlines for myself because I got the feeling that I would not be in lockdown for long. And I actually was not. We were maybe for a couple of months in at home. But then we went back to in-person work relatively soon. But at least during that brief period of time that we were home, I really said, okay, this is a perfect time. Now, the topic of the book, or the overarching purpose of the book, is to provide the reader with a fun reading experience that feels like a conversation that you can, it's a book that you can finish reading over the course of an afternoon, maybe two afternoons at best. So compact enough that it's comfortable to read. And the purpose is that you're going to read the book, and once you're done, you're going to feel more self-confident. And you're also going to feel more confident in what the future may hold, more faith in the future. So those two things are basically what I wanted to transmit to the reader. And I believe I've been successful in that regard. I've been very lucky. Let me tell you, I was very happy because I'm one of the finalists in a contest put forth by something called the International Latino Book Awards. So this is a book that is a finalist in the health and wellness category. But interestingly enough, it's a book that can be appreciated regardless of culture or gender, etc. For example, it also has very good reviews from the Midwest Book Review, from Book Tribe, from the editor of one of the People magazine magazines. It's had a lot of people from different walks of life saying, okay, I found it interesting, or I found it useful. So I'm very happy that it has, you know, touched people. So that's great.
How long did it take you to, like, you know what I mean, get the book done? Because look, you say you had a couple of months, like when lockdown came and you went, okay, now's my moment. Life is in the way in some other respects, but you've got this huge chunk of time free. How long did you like, oh yeah, it's time.
Well, let me tell you, the thing is that by the time COVID started, I did have a draft, a full draft, which is normally what people take a very long time to complete. I had already done that over the course of a couple of years. But of course, it needed a lot of polishing, it needed editing, it needed a number of things, deciding what to keep, what to take out, and all of that. So I think it might have taken me maybe once I focused exclusively on that, maybe 12 months, maybe 2 or 3 months, and then we were ready for printing and for everything else.
Wow. Like, okay, draft taking a couple of years and then like polishing it up.
Yes, exactly.
I
When you can
feel
focus.
I feel like you've turned on some of your old sort of powers from Mexico when you were like editor in chief. Yeah, you're like, yeah. So is it a case of, yeah, you've got it out now on print? Are you going to do a audiobook, say, or anything like that?
Oh, well, let me tell you, we are doing something very interesting right now. So right now the book is available, like you mentioned, as a paperback, also as an ebook. And what we're about to launch in early winter is a video series, a video interview series inspired by the book. It's also much like the book, sharing the same title. The title is Choose to Prevail. So we have the book that I will show you here, and now we're also going to have the series, the interview series. So season one for this series is in post-production right now, and it's quite interesting. I interviewed six different people from very different walks of life that have overcome tremendous odds and are now having a wonderful life, even if it's a little bit different from what they had originally planned. So we're going to be launching that on a new streaming platform called Heart of Hollywood Cinema in early December. And you have no idea, these guests that I was able to speak with, they are fascinating. There's one, for example. He's a former wrestler from Canada, from a small town called Thunder Bay. He moved to Mexico City in the 90s, and he became a massively popular wrestler. He had been a bodyguard for that band Milli Vanilli, but so that was quite a career change, right? So he moved and he became a wrestler, and he had this very goth look, so that was very popular back in the day. And he was a good-looking man, so he very quickly became not just a wrestling sensation, but also kind of like a mainstream celebrity. And he was on the cover of magazines and in different TV shows, very, very popular. But to be honest, I hadn't heard about what had happened to his career in more recent years. And I discovered a very fascinating documentary. His stage name is Vampiro, so like a vampire. And his documentary was called The Nail in the Coffin because he explained how wrestling had really hurt him on a physical level. He now suffers from Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and a number of health challenges. So pretty much he was done with wrestling, at least as his day job, let's put it that way. And also he's a single parent, so he was also very busy with raising his daughter. But here's the thing, I contacted him for interviewing him for the series, and what a fascinating man. Apparently, when he discovered that he was developing Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, he went back to school to become a psychologist to see if he could understand what was going on. And sadly, he found that there really was not much that he could do. So he thought, okay, well, firstly, I'll need to just go into a different line of work. Now I'm going to focus on music. I'm going to focus on my music. I'll be doing radio, I'll be doing podcasts, I'll be doing TV, something different. But he also thought, okay, I might as well look at the silver linings. I mean, obviously I'm not, I mean, nobody says, oh, it's great that I'm not having my memory skills as sharp as they once were. But looking on the bright side, I hold no grudges toward anyone, he says. because I can't remember what they did, if they did anything. And right? And I feel no guilt about things that I might have done because I can't remember what I did, if I actually did anything, right? So he really does try to look on the bright side. And he's like a really funny guy. He says, okay, if I buy a video game, I can save money because I can play it over and over and over. I don't remember what the game is like. So, I mean, it's even a money saver. So he's a sweetheart. I mean, it was really a very cool mindset, I think.
I think the guy's got a wonderful spirit and a fantastic humor. It's like, this way I go, yeah, I'll say that to him. He goes, I can't remember. Please say it again. Okay, I think you I can't remember. Please say it again. I can't remember. And like on the third time, you'll be like, there you go. So like, is this going to be the first season in many seasons, or is it a case of you just like, hey, it's going to be one and done to support the book?
Well, so far we have producers for two. So in theory, we're going to have a total of 12 episodes. Right now, season one is only 6 episodes long. And they're in post-production right now, almost ready to see the light of day. I'm really looking forward to seeing how it turns out. But I think it'll be fascinating. The person that is in charge of editing is this wonderful man that is very well-versed in music videos. And he's the director of a documentary called Recording in Progress, which is about how the music industry had to transition once digital came into play. Because certainly the way you make music now is very different from the way it used to be, which certainly might have shocked or scared studio owners, for example, or studio musicians. So he was a perfect choice for an editor because, well, firstly, he's a great editor. But secondly, many of the guests are somehow music influenced. Like, for example, this wrestler, he is a punk rocker. So that's kind of his vibe. So it's very interesting to have an editor that understands that kind of thing. So it's quite exciting.
So like, it seems like exciting times are ahead of you. Like over the next few years, where would you like to see the direction for yourself to go?
Well, that's, again, it's very hard to say because I might say something now and who knows, next year I might be living in Australia, you know, owning a winery and married to an Australian man. I mean, you never know, right? But
she's out for an Australian man, gentlemen. Pay attention.
You never know. It's very hard to say. But to be honest, I would like to continue working as a court interpreter for as long as possible because, I mean, I really discovered, I believe, a calling. I love it. I really love it. It's something that I enjoy as much as journalism. And I think it's the kind of activity that is totally in line with what I like and what my skill set allows for. And I think that's something important for people that are looking to make a career change or that are maybe fresh out of school and looking for something. Yes, it's important to think about what you like, but also it's very important to see what you're well suited for, because sometimes a career might seem glamorous or interesting, but it might not be exactly in line with what you like. For example, I see a lot of people that are in sales that are millionaires, maybe people that say that sell, I don't know, commercials on TV or things like that. They make a lot of money, certainly. But if I had tried to do something like that, I probably would have been fired by the second day because it's not my strong suit. I'm not a salesperson. So you really do need to get a feel for what you personally are good at and find something that's in line with that so that it doesn't feel like an uphill climb every morning, but rather something relaxing.
I hear you. Like, so do you feel some days that the spirit of that journalist you were still like going, hey, I'm right over here if you need me. Like just looking at you.
Let me tell you, there's no escaping. I think that the journalistic experience is really not letting letting go of me. At this time, I'm an editor for a magazine called Heart of Hollywood Magazine, and I work on many, many different writing projects. A lot of people reach out to me constantly saying, can you help me with this? Can you edit this thing? Can you write this other thing? Can And I'm happy to do so when time allows or when the project is interesting. So definitely, I think that's something that I never actually stopped doing. It just shift it into something more compact, more contained.
Yeah, all I've got to simply say, I had a sneaky feeling that, yeah, there was more doing the court thing. I was like, okay. You're like, yeah, eight to five and I'm done. I was like, I was looking at you like, okay, look, if you went through university, like doing an internship from 8 to 1 and then, 8 to 12, then going from 1 till like 10 at night, yeah, to do your like university studies, passing, getting through that, and then going into a work like force, and then like going, yes, I was doing this, I was doing that. Like, I was like, oh, really? Now I'm like going, yeah, I work in the courts, great, and I do this thing for a magazine. Okay, yeah. So, how have you found like sort of like the balance with regards to like doing the court thing and like doing the magazine thing, and doing the book thing? It's like, when I say it like that, it's like, have you slowed down? Have you? You're lying to me. No, it's like,
yes, you're right. I am lying. No, I really am. No, the reality is that, strangely enough, I think that the way that I have found balance is not by removing things from my life, but by adding things on. Mm. For example, one of the things that I do now that I didn't do before, because I, again, also not on my radar, is that for fun, as a hobby, I make wine. So that's something that I wouldn't have done otherwise. That's interesting. I've also started painting. So that's also something that I wouldn't have done at all because I didn't have time. Mm. And that was something that was really important because when I was little, when I was a little girl and even a young teen, I was always drawing. I always had my sketch pad and it was really almost like a compulsion. So much so that at one point I broke my right arm. So I trained myself to draw with my left hand because I just couldn't stop. I really couldn't stop. But, you know, again, life does get in the way. And I hadn't done anything artistic for many years. Mm. And maybe in the last 2 or 3 years, I decided to go not so much into sketching or drawing anymore, but rather to experiment with painting. So I've done a little bit of that. And, well, there's a friend of mine is putting an art show together for March. I'm hesitant because while I like what I paint, my friend is a brilliant artist, so I'm not sure I want to be compared and contrasted with her fantastic paintings, but I might be a part of that as well.
Right. Oh, hello. would you say you are a Renaissance woman?
I believe so. I mean, that sounds, I mean, I think that sounds very glamorous and it sounds very flattering. So I certainly like to be considered a Renaissance woman, but it's, you know, it's interesting because there are two schools of thought. Some people believe that you need to focus on one thing and one thing exclusively so that you can really grow in that field. Others, like myself, believe that you need or that you benefit from having a wide range of interests. Both have value, certainly. But in my view, in this day and age, let's say the wide-ranging person might have a better shot at leading a life that they enjoy. Firstly, because the job market is in constant flux. So I think that it would be a little bit risky to focus only on one thing. Mm-hmm. Now you might say, no, actually, if you focus on something very obscure, you will always be in high demand. And I can't say that that's necessarily wrong. It might be true. Let's say that you're the expert in one specific component that is needed for building iPads or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, certainly you will be in high demand now. But again, I struggle to think that that will be needed at all times for the rest of your life because things are in such a constant state of change that maybe 2 years from now, iPads will no longer be a thing, or they will not be necessary, or technology will have evolved in a way that what you used to know is of no use to anyone right now. So I'm not sure that it's necessarily the best idea to become super specialized, although I do know that some people prefer that. I think that having a wider range of fields that you're interested in somehow can make you better at all of them. Mm. For example, me as a word interpreter, I think one of the reasons I'm not even going to try to be modest, because I think I'm very good at what I do, and so are my coworkers. I think that we are all a very specific type of person. In California, the certification you need to become a court interpreter is not easy to come by. There are two exams, one of which has a 3% pass rate. So the reality is that it's a very specific type of person. And I feel that the people that can do it well, such as my peers and myself, yeah, I think it's mostly because we're interested in many things. And if you're not interested in many things, your vocabulary might be a little bit limited. And in this type of work, you need to have no limits to your vocabulary, because anybody can come in and discuss anything. Mm-hmm. It might be a small claim suit where somebody wants to discuss, maybe they're a DJ and somebody stole their equipment. So you need to be well-versed in that type of vocabulary. Maybe it's somebody that has a bike repair shop and they had an issue with the repair on a bike. So you also need to be familiar with that technology. Now, so basically the mindset or the personality of somebody that is a successful interpreter would be something like a Trivial Pursuit contestant, in the sense that what do you need to know? Well, a bunch of things about pretty much everything. And that's something that you probably wouldn't get from a hyper-focus on something to the exclusion of everything else. So I think that, for example, at least as to vocabulary building, being interested in many things is useful. But also, for example, as an artist, let's say that you're a screenwriter, you will be a more effective screenwriter, certainly, if you have a wide range of interests than if you don't, because you will have more experiences to draw from, more natural dialogue, because you will have heard more people speaking, a better understanding of what your characters are going to be like. So really, sometimes having a wide range of interests benefits you in ways that you might not expect.
Mm. Yeah. Did you say, first things first, did you say your course had a 3% pass rate?
Yes. There are two tests. The first one is a written test. I don't know the pass rate for that one, but if you do pass that first one, which few people do, then you go on to the oral test. And there's roughly a 3% pass rate for that particular part of the exam. Which makes sense, because I mean, in California, a lot of people speak Spanish, so you don't want just anybody that speaks Spanish. Being bilingual is not the sole, let's say, requirement. It goes beyond that. So they need to be very, very picky.
Okay. Wow. That's crazy. Like, this is the thing, with regards to, like, if this was 50 years ago, like, yes, I would say the whole sort of specialist skill ideal would be absolutely spot on. I'll go, yeah, specialize in a particular skill and like get paid highly well. These days I'll go, look, yeah, get high skills across many fields, and then basically be able to, if you can switch and change, yeah, that's a good thing. And if you've got many skills across a low skill thing, like, yeah, be versatile. Don't be too up your own backside and like, yeah, see, like, go where the job is. I think with regards to the way technology and basically the way like so many companies out there sort of do disruptions on services here, there, and everywhere, it's like jobs go in a blink of an eye. Even if like you are working, like if you sign on to particular websites where like they all of a sudden, I'm not going to say the name, all of a sudden decide to change from one thing, then like everyone looked at it and went, are you crazy? You do that one thing. And now they've gone back to doing that one thing.
Yes.
It's like, you know what I mean? Look, everyone looked at that and went, yeah. But that's the way, like, in business, there will be many a company and many sort of job roles which will switch and switch again. Yes. And switch again. And that sort of switching is getting faster and faster and faster. And the better you can adapt, the better you will be served. If you just want to be an employee, if you want to be an owner of a business, then yeah, it might be a different game you're playing.
Oh, absolutely. And there might still be a little bit of a stigma to being more wide-ranging. Like people might say, well, jack of all trades, master of none. But the reality is that that's not always the case. You can be a master in one area and a hobbyist in another area and interested in another thing. You don't necessarily have to be only good at one thing. In fact, you can see it across the board with many people, let's say, in creative fields. Many people that are brilliant musicians are also great photographers or dancers, for example, or different things. I think that you can be a master in more than one field, potentially.
Yeah. I think you do need to be that. And look, I'd sometimes look at some job specs when I was searching, and you look at the job spec, what they expect someone to do. And you're like going, okay, I see my job there. I see someone else's job there. And I see another job there. And I see someone's part-time job there. And you want this all encompassing in one person. And like, don't get me wrong, you might be able to get that, but it's like you kind of like, oh, you can't. Don't expect all of it to be done well when you're like telling someone to do like three people's jobs. No.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. So, so with this, will you, like, you're doing your interview show, will you start like, say, a podcast out of this with that interview show, or doing like something along a different line, maybe a course or something down the road?
It's hard to say. Again, you never say never, right?
But I think that I'm always probing.
Right? No, but at this time, I think we're going to go with those two seasons, see how it plays out. And if interesting stories keep coming up, maybe we will segue into either more video or a podcast or something of some nature. Yes.
Okay. Interesting. Very interesting. Now, I have to ask, this will be most probably one of my last questions, unless if something else comes out of it. Now, if there was anyone you could interview or like basically have a sit down dinner with, just like to have a one-on-one discussion, anyone at all, who would that be?
Oh, that's very hard to say. Well, let me tell you, I don't know if I would like to invite somebody that I really admire, because sometimes you're very disappointed. It does happen. One time I was actually able to interview one of my favorite comedians, a big celebrity. If I were to tell you the name, you would certainly recognize the name, immediately recognizable, one of the most famous comedians of the 90s. And to this day, he's in his 60s now. He's been very active for many years, one of the richest men in the world, highly successful. Okay, I mean, just for easy identification, he had a TV show that was massively successful. Okay, so I sat down with this man. Everything I asked him, he would just go, no, or yes. And I would say, okay, would you care to elaborate? No. And I would say no, and he would go like, and I was like, this is like pulling teeth. This is a horrible conversation. So really, I thought that it was quite disappointing. So I think that in order to avoid any kind of letdown, maybe I wouldn't like to select like a favorite celebrity or anybody like that. But for example, there are people whose brain I would like to pick. For example, I'm very interested in fitness. Maybe I would like to sit down with one of the foremost, let's say, athletes in the world and pick their brains about what they do to enhance their performance or something like that. Something more results focused than personality focused, because again, we don't know what we're getting.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Interesting. Like that. So like what I would simply say is like, there's going to be times where you need to have that conversation. Like even if you like hero worship them, at times, and if they're like, yeah, if they're not the sort of person you expected them to be, it's like, okay, no worries. But but if they are that person you expected to be, and then some, even more so, think about how much richer it is. You got to take that gamble. You got to take that chance, you know? You never avoid that, yeah.
Absolutely. And even if they never do become your great friends, at least we discussed the strength of weak ties. So there's that.
Yeah, you never know. They might lead you on to somewhere better. Now, yeah, even with a yes, no, maybe. Now, Sandy, can you tell the lovely people out there how they can find you, how they can get in contact with you over those interwebs?
Absolutely. You can find me on Instagram. You can read about the book journey through at Choose to Prevail. There is also a Facebook group also called Choose to Prevail. Mm-hmm. And the book itself, it's available pretty much on any online book retailer. Amazon, for example, might be the better choice, but you can find it pretty much on any online platform. Online mostly because the book came out during COVID times. So really, I focused more heavily on online channels. It is available in a couple of bookstores here in the US, but the reality is that most sales have been online, as you can imagine.
Don't worry. Like, look, we're heading in the right direction, fingers crossed. It's like, yes, there'll be more out person-to-person meetings and more opportunities. And yes, things will go in the right way. But yes, Sandy, I've got to say thank you for coming on today. You have been a superstar. Brought a smile to my face. And like, yeah, definitely, like, you're most probably one of the only few people who look at Los Angeles as a small provincial town, which is easy to get around, to say the least.
It was lovely. So lovely to have this conversation with you. I had a wonderful time. Thank you.
Ah, pleasure, pleasure. And I'd like to say thank you to you, my friends, my life warriors. Yes, if you want to find Sandy, it will all be in the show notes, in the description. So please follow her, buy her book. Celebrate the occasion. And yes, please stay safe, stay well, be awesome, be excellent, be fantastic, be all the positive bees you can be in this world, and then some. Thank you, guys. Have a great day. Yeah. Peace. And we are...